This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by iFixit. You've seen their teardowns all over the internet, the free repair guide for everything, and the ultimate marketplace for electronic tools and parts. For $5 off your purchase of $10 or more, go to iFixit.com/TWiT and enter the code KNOWHOW at checkout. Today on Know-How,
your questions, our answers.
A first look at an all-in-one.
And Padre makes mistakes.
Welcome to Know-How. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballaser.
I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to be dropping the knowledge on you so you can be geeks like us.
That's right.
What we do.
Who wouldn't want to be geeks like us?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I'm like a paragon of...
Coolness, right?
No.
Is that what you're going for?
Nerd.
No, nerd. Right, yeah. Right.
I'm going to be honest. I mean, look, there's no use in lying. I am a nerd, and I know you're a nerd, too, because you're watching my show, and that's a good thing, because we're going to celebrate our nerdness and our geekness together.
Yeah, but see, I'm wearing glasses today.
Well, glasses always make you look cooler.
That's like plus 10 nerd right there.
You know, my brother, when he was a kid, he wanted to look smarter, so he kept faking his eye test, so they made him wear glasses, which screwed up his vision.
You know, you can always wear frames without lenses in it.
No, that was
clearly
enough.
I have lenses in here. I am blind without these.
I don't want to say Coke bottle, but yeah, they look pretty much like Coke bottles.
You can nearly see behind my head. I don't want to draw more attention to my glasses than are necessary, but
see, I always wondered, when you have glasses that strong, aren't you afraid to go outside and like look up because the sun might actually be just focused and burn through your eyes?
See, that's the trick. Thank you, Alex. The secret is I don't go outside.
actually, this is true. I just had my blood test done for my 6-month checkup. And I think a regular vitamin D count is something like 80.
Yeah.
Mine was 2.
Like negative numbers.
Like, Robert, you are sucking vitamin D out of the people near you. I'm like, oh, sorry.
Is that why I always feel terrible when I'm over here?
I mean, evidently a daylight balanced monitor does not substitute for sunlight.
No, but I guess that adds to your geek cred, right?
It does.
For better or worse.
Well, the scary thing is I was on a beach in Los Angeles last weekend, and I actually got sunburned. I'm like, how did that not help?
Well, the thing is, I have seen you when you're tanned, and I didn't recognize you.
Yeah, I get dark.
Yeah.
I get really dark. I actually got sunburned. I haven't been sunburned in a long time. Like, the other day, I was like, man, my face is itchy. I'm like, I'm sunburned. Oh, my goodness.
You walked out into the sunlight for like 3 minutes or so. Like, something's sizzling.
Well, I mean, there's no ozone in Los Angeles, so you get sunburned really quickly.
It's basically like Australia down there.
Yeah. All right. But we're not here to talk about Australia or sunburn. We're here because we have sort of a wild card episode of Know-How. We like to do this every once in a while. You guys have been incredibly, incredibly active in our Google Plus group. Thank you very much for it. It's always fun to see. But that means that we have a lot of really good questions, and I don't like letting them stack up too much. We've done that in the past. We wanted to run through a few and then show you some of the cool gizmos and gadgets that we've gotten into the studio, including a brand new all-in-one from HP. And as you mentioned, I do make mistakes. And this is
Who
how
doesn't?
This is, well, I make a lot. This is how Know-How works. Whenever we bring a new project, you're seeing maybe revision 9 because revisions 1 through 8 did not work out properly.
Right.
I'm going to show you, I'm very early into a new project that we're doing that's kind of a continuation of our Grow House series.
Right.
It's a continuation of our Aquavase series. And it's also a way for you to not to kill chia pets.
Yeah, not to kill chia pets, but I feel like you're destroying the illusion that we have built up that whenever we do a project, we do it right the first time. Every time.
No. In fact, I can say with absolute certainty we've never had a project that has worked properly the first time.
And I don't think we've ever had a project that worked right the first time when we tried it on the set.
I don't. Hey, but the magic of editing is magic. All right, let's jump into it. We've got a really good question from Tracy, who needs a little help finding his first 3D printer.
All right, well, good thing I wore my glasses today. Tracy asks, Hey guys, I'm looking to buy my first 3D printer. My price point is sub $350. I've watched the know-how episode for the Monoprice Maker Select and the new Matter Mod T. I like both of these printers, but I've seen some posts saying that the Mod T is more of a toy than a good 3D printer. Any recommendations? I'm new to this category, but I catch on pretty quick. Thanks in advance.
Tracy, that is an excellent question because we did have that episode, our holiday special.
That's right.
Where we showed off both the Maker Select version 2 and the new Matter Mod T.
Right.
And the reason why we had both of those is because they were both sub $300 printers or close to $300 printers.
Yeah, because wasn't the Monoprice one? That was on sale. That was like a Christmas sale.
Yeah, right? It was like $279, but on sale. Now it's $317. So it's gone up a little bit. Cool. The new Matter Mod T has always been around $299. They had a little bump, but it's come back down to $299. And yes, when we did the review, I said they both had strong points. The strong point of the Mod T is it is a perfect and absolute fantastic beginner's printer. If you have someone who is not techie, who does not have the patience to calibrate, well, that's what you want to go. In fact, we did, here's a little bit of B-roll of it so you can see what the Mod T looks like. It's, you know, it's a beautifully designed printer. It's got this wonderful acrylic case that not only makes it look like something that you'd want on your dining room table, but it's also incredibly quiet.
Right.
Yeah, this is one of the things I liked about it. This you actually could have in your kitchen or your dining room or your music room, and it's not going to detract from the experience of anything else.
I thought the bed, the plate, the way the plate moved on the bed was pretty cool, how they did that.
Oh, it's very cool. I mean, because you're using a pinion system. Now, the pinion system isn't just so that it looks different from other 3D printers. What it meant was there was no way to miscalibrate this thing. The bed could never not be level. The bed could never not be in the right position. It does its own auto-check every time you start a print, so you are going to get that nicely calibrated print every single time you go to initiate a print job.
Which is important if you're just starting out.
Precisely. Now, here's the thing. I bought one of these for my dad because this is exactly... My dad is one of these guys. He loves technology, but if it doesn't work the first or the second time, it will sit in the box and he will never use it again.
Right.
This is something I could give to him. All of the setup and all of the configuration is done in the web. So you send your print to the New Matter store. It's stored in your library and then it communicates with your printer wirelessly.
Right.
Which is nice. You know, it means all I have to do is say, Dad, you don't have to, you know, design it and then slice it
and then
put it on a card and then put the card into the printer and select the right print job and select the right... No, all I say is, upload it to the internet, hit print, and then hit the button on the new Mod T. That's it.
It makes it almost plug and play.
It's super plug and play. Now, there are a couple of things that I didn't like about it. It's a non-heated build plate. Also, that build plate, as you can see, it's tiny. It's really, really small. So it's good for, you know, small jobs. The resolution's also not as good as what I'd want. That bed and rod system is cool, and I love watching this thing work. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the entire build platform moves also means that it's going to be a little bit inaccurate sometimes with where it places down filament. That's just one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Standard 1.75 millimeter PLA filament, resolution down to 100 micron, 100 millimeters per second printing speed, so it's actually pretty fast. And it supports STL, OBJ, and G-code, so you know pretty much everything that we use out there.
Yeah.
Again, perfect novice printer, but, and I said this during that episode, you're very quickly going to outpace what it can actually do.
Right. I mean, I like it because it's so plug and play, but for some of the designs that we've done, we've kind of gone beyond this. But have you ever had any problems with, like, the head? Because,
No.
So
that's actually another good thing. It's actually very well made.
Okay.
It's incredibly well made.
Because that would be one of my fears. Because the Monoprice, like, you could detach everything.
Yeah.
And then replace it.
Yeah. And actually, if we go to the B-roll for the Monoprice, so this was the Maker Select version 2 that we played with. This is not a beginner's printer.
No, and you kind of have to make some modifications to it, don't
you? You do. So I've strengthened it so that it makes, it doesn't wobble so much on the Z-axis, which was bothering me because it meant that my prints were sometimes not adhering.
Right.
But it does have a heated bed. It has a much larger, much, much larger build area. It's 7.9 inches by 7.9 inches by 7.1 inches. And again, 100 micron resolution. It uses standard 1.75 millimeter filament, just like the Mod T, but it's not just PLA. It's ABS, Felty, XT, PET, TPU, TPC, FPE, FPA. basically all the types of filament you might want to use. I typically only use PLA because it's non-toxic, but it's nice to have a printer that could do the other types.
And you usually work in a very confined space with poor ventilation, so...
Which explains a lot about me.
Yeah, right?
Kind of does, right? Also, you know, it comes with a one-year warranty. Here's the thing. You will spend more time configuring this, and you need to, because if you don't, you're going to get prints that are kind of close, but not. You will spend hours making this thing work properly, but once it does work properly... And once you have your workflow down, it is a fantastic printer. It is so much more advanced than the Mod-T.
Yeah, and I'm trying... So Patrick Delahanty, one of our engineers here, bought one. And I think he's kind of struggled with the very beginning of it because he was trying to do very fine, small prints.
Yep.
And then, but also, you know, coming from the beginner standpoint of not really being sure how to calibrate or being able to structurally hold it together, like you were saying, with different mods. So... You're going to have to spend some time with this one to get good at it.
But, I mean, once you are good at it, once you've figured out the little fineries of how it works and how it calibrates,
it is
a fantastic device. It is so much more capable than the Mod-T. But, again, there's that learning curve.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've got someone who is a beginner and is going to stay a beginner,
right.
The Mod-T
is your dad.
Is much better. My dad
perfect.
Is.
Like, he just wants to work. He wants to print I don't know what, but...
Precisely. You know what he's been printing?
What?
Bowls for Gadget.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But I mean, if you are a techie and you plan to do some advanced 3D modeling, you're probably going to want something a little higher. Now, Patrick Delahanty, speaking of Patrick, he got the plus version of this, which is $399. So it's $100, almost $100 more expensive.
Uh-huh.
It's a little bit faster. It's basically the same printer. It integrates the control into the actual base of the printer. But our commenter wanted something sub-350, so this would be the one for him.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So if you know, again, I don't want to say that one is better than the other because I would never get the Maker Select for my dad.
No.
But you're a techie, so this is probably the one you're going to want to get. And at $317, you can put in a little bit of time to get it to work right. Oh, and by the way, if you go to Thingiverse... Mm-hmm. Many people have put their designs for strengthening the supports on there. So you can actually print the supports you need to make your printer print better.
Right. So just get it set up and don't jostle it while it's printing the extra supports that you need for it.
Right. Well, and Patrick keeps saying the Mod-T at $399. The Mod-T is actually $299. But so it's a little cheaper. Okay. But that's it. So go ahead and get yourself a Monoprice. Fantastic printers. What else we got?
All right. So this next feedback question comes from Hagos?
Hagos Roche.
And they ask, I live in Long Island, New York. We had a storm. The power flickered on and off numerous times. My APC battery backup didn't kick in, and my 12 terabyte LaCie NAS died. I am unable to get the web interface at all. This is my only backup.
Ouch.
Here is what I need. 1, affordable but good battery backup. 2, if I get another NAS and drop the drives in, am I up a creek or is there hope? And 3, is there a way to manually connect to the drive not networked?
Okay, first of all, Hagos, I feel you. This is a nightmare. We've said many times that a NAS is not a backup. A NAS is a storage. You still need a backup of the NAS. But a lot of us do use our NASs like backups, at least for a time. I have a NAS in my network that is not replicated anywhere. I just know that if it goes down, I lose everything. So everything there has to be losable.
Right.
Anything with, say, video assets, that's on at least 2 of my NASs because one of them might let go and I need to have a backup copy.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you have to be diligent about because what has ended up happening to me is that every computer that I upgrade, I copy the backup of a backup that I had, and it's basically just an onion layer of backups that I have, and I need to just consolidate everything and then make sure to duplicate it.
We should probably do an episode on proper data etiquette because when you start getting multiple NASs, what happens is you have 15 versions of something.
Right. A way to be able to find duplicate files would be nice.
Although, sometimes I don't want it to deduplicate because I actually do want multiple versions of the same project. But okay, that's neither here nor there.
Okay.
What we're talking about is what Hagos is going through. Horrible, horrible, horrible. But unfortunately, it is not all that uncommon. NASs hate to be interrupted, especially in the middle of a write. What you can actually do is corrupt the RAID array and suddenly it goes down. Now, a lot of NASAs, like my Synologies, they will auto-recover, and they will auto-recover in a way that I still have access to the interface. So let's say I lose power on my 1515, right? It has to rebuild that RAID. But while it's rebuilding, I can still access the interface. And the interface will tell me, I'm rebuilding the RAID. You can have access to the parts that are rebuilt, but it's going to be much slower.
Okay.
That's ideal. That's what you want. Unfortunately, the LaCie, horrible design. Horrible, 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 horrible design. If it unsyncs, if the RAID needs to be rebuilt, you lose access to the interface entirely.
Wow.
In fact, there's not even like an error that says, hey, I'm rebuilding. It's just, you just kind of have to assume it's rebuilding.
Wow, and then just wait, and hopefully it comes back?
And what I've seen on the forums is some users were saying, it wasn't actually rebuilding, but I still waited for 3 days thinking it was rebuilding.
That's frustrating.
That's super frustrating, yeah. And this kind of came out in the answers to his post where people were saying, well, just wait. Yeah, you're going to have to wait. And 12 terabytes, that's a very, very long wait, unfortunately.
So say you wait, what happens then?
If you wait, hopefully at some point in his post, he went on to say he does hear some drive access, and there does seem to be something
not
happening.
Not like clicking, right?
No, but there's just drive access, legitimate drive access. So, I mean, the best course of action is to wait. Because if you have no backup, you have no other option. Now, I will say this. Do not, and I hope you haven't already done this, do not reconnect power and then disconnect power and then reconnect power, then disconnect power, because what you're doing is you're actually interrupting the rebuild cycle, which makes it even worse. And in the worst case scenario, if you interrupt during a rebuild cycle, the next time you power up, it won't even try to rebuild anymore and you're just hosed.
And then you're just waiting forever.
Yeah, just sit there.
Oh, God, that's frustrating.
I had a low-powered NAS that was like the same design as a LaCie, and it was only 6 terabytes, and it took 2 weeks to rebuild.
Wow. Why does it take so long? Just the drive speed? Or?
Well, no, that's the way that RAID arrays work. Yeah. You've got information that is located across multiple drives.
Right.
So if you lose a drive, if it unsyncs, it actually has to go back and check all the parity of all the different files and fix things that aren't right. That could take a while.
Okay. Yeah, especially when you're dealing with terabytes of data.
Yeah, unfortunately. Okay, now, so that's the woe. I'm sorry about that, but that's where you are. Now let's talk a little bit about the future. You did mention that your UPS didn't work, and unfortunately that's a surprise waiting for a lot of people who think that they've protected their NASs, because that's going to happen to everybody who has bought a cheap UPS and put it behind a NAS.
Right. You're not talking about the United Postal Service.
No, I'm talking about
uninterrupted power supply, right?
Exactly. So what you have is a battery, and when the power goes out, it switches over to the battery so that it can continue to provide AC power to your computer, your monitor, your NAS.
Right.
Right? Problem. There's actually two main types of UPSs, and they are very, very different in design, and the one that he has was the wrong type. He has what's called a backup UPS. So the way a backup UPS works is when you so it goes between your device and your utility, right? So you plug the UPS into the wall, and then you plug your computer or your NAS into the UPS.
Right.
When it's in normal operation, which means it's getting power from the wall, you're going straight into the maybe through some power conditioning, but straight into the wall.
Yeah.
When it detects that it's lost power, it switches over to an internal battery and an inverter to give power to your device.
Right.
Unfortunately, standby UPSs often do not switch that quickly. It can take, up
What's
to half a second.
What's the point, then?
Well, I mean, because in some devices, they can handle that. Like, a computer can handle a little bit of a dip before it kicks in.
Uh-huh.
A NAS, especially a poorly designed NAS, cannot.
Oh, okay. All right.
It will just freak out, and it will unsync. So what he probably has is he has an APS, which is actually, that's a good brand, but he's got a backup power supply.
I'm pretty sure that's what we have, isn't it, Alex? Do you know?
APC. Oh, APC. Sorry, okay. APC. Now, the one you do want is called an online UPS, and that's actually reversed. So think of the same scenario. I've got my computer, I've got the UPS, and I've got the utility.
Right.
In an online backup, what's going to happen is I'm going to go from the wall into the UPS.
Right.
The UPS is always charging the battery. The battery is powering the inverter, and then the inverter powers the device.
That makes
sense.
So
I am always on battery power. It's just that when I'm plugged in, it's charging the battery as I'm discharging it.
Right. So if there's ever loss of power, it doesn't matter because it's still always taking the power from the battery.
Precisely. It was always on that circuit. There is no dip. There is no, it's just there. So suddenly the battery's no longer being charged.
Now, are those more expensive? Is that why?
Way more expensive.
Oh,
they're
okay.
Far more expensive. And also, they are incredibly inefficient because, as you can imagine, charging a battery just so it could be discharged, that's not a really efficient use of power. You're gonna take a big loss in thermal loss, so it's gonna generate a lot of heat. That's waste heat. Also, that battery is gonna go bad more quickly than the battery in a backup.
That makes sense.
A backup UPS.
Now, the ones we have, I thought, are they lead acid batteries that are in there, though?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
You wouldn't trust lithium ion. Because that much lithium ion going bad,
Okay,
But you have to remember, at Interrupt, we had racks, like literally rolling racks, with like 40 kilowatt hours of power. And there's this battery backup, literally racks of batteries. Like you would pull them out, and it's 150 pounds of batteries. You would just plug it into the chassis. So that's what we need for a data center. Those are crazy expensive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you've got equipment that can never go down, that's really the only option. There is a third type called a delta, which is kind of a combination of both. What it does is it splits the difference. So it's kind of running off the battery with the inverter, and it's kind of running off the utility, so that if you lose utility, it dips, but not enough to make the device go out. It's trickier to do. It is more expensive, but it's far more efficient.
Okay.
But as it's getting even more expensive, he's probably not going to want to do that. You're probably going to look at an online backup, and those can go anywhere for single use, anywhere from $250 to $600.
Wow.
Versus $60 for a standard.
But if you're using it for your NAS, which you shouldn't ever have the power go out on, then I guess you would get one of those then?
Yeah. Well, Y-Guy in the chat room wants to know what's wrong with APCs. Nothing wrong with APCs. I use APCs. But the devices I use them with can handle being on the backup. My Synologies can actually handle the dip. They won't reset. His LaCie obviously can't.
Now, the Synologies don't have like little batteries in them. They have a different...
They're just really well designed.
Yeah. How much cheaper is a LaSalle? Is that what they're called?
LaCie? It's more expensive than a Synology.
Really?
So, when you're looking at this problem, what you should be saying is, I'm going to go buy myself a new NAS.
Yeah, shop around.
Okay. His other questions... could he just take the drives out and put them into a new array? Probably not, especially with the LaCie. It's not going to work. And the third question was, what did he want to know? He wanted to know, is there a way to manually connect the drive to a computer? You can, and run something like SpinRite to see if you can fix it, but it's probably not going to work.
Ah, man, that's a rough situation.
It really is.
So the lesson in the end is get a good UPS and...
lesson is either get a not so good NAS with a really good backup, or get an okay backup with a really good NAS.
Okay, but just not.
Just don't get an okay backup and an okay NAS.
And an okay NAS. Okay. Yeah.
Remember, this is your data, folks. That's your pride and joy.
12 terabytes too.
Oh, and by the way, his situation was exacerbated by the fact that he had the power flickering on off on off on off on off on off.
That's true.
Probably complicated it. A backup would definitely have fixed that. Yeah. That might actually have hit my well-designed Synology. That might have hit it. If it went on and off a bunch of times, the dip would just last too long.
So say you're going through that situation where the power goes out. Like, should you unplug your NAS and then wait for the power to come back on and be solid and then plug it back in?
I have an automated way to do it. So what my APC will do is it will send a signal to my NASs to shut down. At the first sign of a power problem, it will do a safe shutdown.
That's smart.
Yeah.
I like that.
I don't want it just to run until the batteries run out.
Right.
It's the same problem.
Right.
But a lot of people don't have that. And if that's the case, then go ahead and unplug your NAS. Because what you don't want is you don't want your NAS to restart and the power goes out again.
Right, exactly.
And then restart and the power goes out again. That would be,
right, which where you were kind of, the same example was if you come up to your NAS after this has happened, don't keep unplugging and plugging it back in.
Don't do that.
Okay.
Unless you really hate your NAS.
Some people might.
We've got one more. Let's go ahead and get one more question in here.
All right. This one comes from Todd, and he asks, did any router manufacturers ever put the three dumb router principles and concepts into practice in a single hardware package?
Yes. Okay, yeah. What he's talking about is the three dumb router setup that Steve Gibson brought up on Security Now last year. Great idea, actually, which is to take three of your older routers and make one your primary, one is the trusted network, and one is the untrusted network. And you put all your Internet of Things on the untrusted network. And the whole idea is the devices on the untrusted network cannot see the devices in the trusted network. Mm-hmm. So even if they get owned, they can't start then attacking.
Infecting the rest of your network.
Precisely. Yeah. Super simple way to do it. There are, I mean, I have more advanced ways to do it because I've got switches with VLANs and such.
Oh, fancy.
Which kind of solves all that. But it was nice because, A, he was using gear that you probably already have hanging around.
Right.
B, they're physical, and people have an easier time with physical. It's like, that's the router for the untrusted. If my untrusted's not working, reset that router.
Right.
This is the router for my trusted. If those aren't working, reset that router. Nothing's working, reset the main router. So that's, in a sense, it's easier for people to maintain it. However, the question was, did any manufacturer introduce that sort of three dumb router setup into their package? And the answer is actually yes, and you've already seen it. Most higher-end routers, those from Asus especially, and, of course, our Synology, do integrate a little bit of this. Actually, Alex, if you go to my computer, you remember we showed this off last week. When we were talking about our network setup. So what this has is this has the ability to create a guest network. Now, that guest network, on this particular case, it's wireless, but I can also assign that to a local access port if I wanted to. And what it will do is anything connected to the guest network can only see the internet.
Right.
It can see no other guest devices, and it can see nothing on my trusted network.
That's an AP isolation.
Right. That's a VLAN.
Okay.
It's a VLAN. So I've created a VLAN. This is essentially the three dumb router setup, except it's all within one box. That one box has my main gateway, which my guest network can see and my trusted network can see. My trusted network can see anything on the guest network.
Right.
My trusted network can see the internet. But the untrusted network cannot see anything on the trusted network. It can only see the internet. That's VLANs.
I just did that, actually, because I have a Dyson vacuum that I'm using for a review, but it has to connect to your Wi-Fi so that you can, well, you know, remotely turn it on to start vacuuming, but also it does updates and things like that. I was like, I don't really want to feed my normal Wi-Fi password into this, you know, Internet of Things device, so I use my guest network to do that.
See, and isn't that cool? Doesn't it feel good when you do that? Because, like, yeah, okay, I'm doing best practices.
I feel better. Yeah, it's like, it's isolated. I may still run into issues, but we'll find out.
Yeah. Now, if you can't afford a higher-end router, you can still do the three dumb router setup. And in fact, the very first episode of our Networking 102 series, which is coming up very soon, we are actually assembling a three dumb router network using Linksys WRT54Gs.
DDWRT. I mean, we have a lot of those laying around.
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, when we come back, it's time to open up a box. We've got a new toy here in the Twit TV studio. We want to share it with you. But before we get to that, let's listen to these messages. Folks, I understand. You're a maker. You're a DIYer. You love to take things apart. You love to see how they work. You love to put them back together. And once you've got all that knowledge, it gives you the ability to fix, to improve, to upgrade your gear. But it's not good to upgrade your gear if you're using the wrong tools. It's not good to upgrade your projects if you're using the wrong parts. And it's definitely not good to open up your devices unless you've got an instruction manual on how to put it back together. And that's why we're so happy to have iFixit as a sponsor of Know How. Now, iFixit is a premier supplier of parts and tools for the DIYer and for the, the maker in the modern world. iFixit provides more than 22,000 free repair guides and 90,000 troubleshooting solutions. Those good people are experts in computer electronics repair. You've seen their videos. They tear things down so that you don't have to. iFixit provides all the repair knowledge that you need for free. And they also sell a wide array of parts and tools to help you get the job done right. They know what they're doing, so they built a toolkit that does too. That's this, the ProTec Toolkit. It's completely reimagined. It's just as rugged and portable as before, but they've integrated the feedback that they've received from their customers. They've now angled their bits. They're using magnets to keep them in the right place. And they've got everything in this beautiful roll that is both functional, rugged, and incredibly easy to use. Hand-selected high-quality steel bits, custom-anodized aluminum driver handles, and they thought of everything, so you only have to worry about the fix, not the tools that you're using. Speaking of those tools, you get a 64-bit driver kit. That's an upgrade from their older kit. Precision ESD-safe tweezers, including a pair of reverse tweezers, a wide variety of plastic opening tools and picks to safely work on tablets and smartphones, a suction cup for display assembly removal, a metal spudger, and iFixit's own rubber-handled Jimmy pry tool. A great way to get into cases without destroying them. The ProTek Toolkit is the last precision toolkit you'll ever need. We trust it here on KnowHow, and we know you will too. Here's what we'd like you to do. We want you to take your makering to the next level. The people at iFixit never stop repairing, and with this toolkit under your belt, you won't either. Head over to iFixit.com/twit and use the code KNOWHOW at checkout to save $5 on your purchase of $10 or more. Even if you don't buy anything, you can still use their free repair guides, troubleshooting answer forms, and their other educational resources on their website anytime your tech has an accident or when you have an upgrade that goes wrong. Folks, trust iFixit. Brian and I do, and we know you will too. And we thank iFixit for their support of KnowHow. Okay, Brian, so this magically appearing piece of technology is the unboxed device. This is HP's brand new all-in-one. And yeah. I got to say, I've never been a huge fan of all-in-ones just because I like the idea of upgrading. I like the idea of choosing the components.
Right.
And when we got this, I was skeptical. I was like, okay, maybe we'll use it, maybe we won't. But over the last week, I've learned to really kind of like this thing.
You're starting to get impressed?
I'm kind of getting impressed. And
this monitor looks really nice.
Yeah. Now, that is a 34-inch, 21:9 aspect ratio monitor. That's a 1,900-millimeter radius for the curve, for those people who get really geeky about curved screens. It's ultra-wide quad, it's weird. This is 3440 by 1440.
Wow.
So think of it as it's a little bit pinched. Yeah. Technicolor certified, which means that if you want to do photo work or video work, this is actually the colors that they are. You don't have to do any calibration. This is exactly how it's going to look.
Nice.
I like that. IPS, which is going to give you a super wide viewing angle, 178-degree viewing angle, which you're going to appreciate because one of the things about curved displays, people always say it looks weird unless you're dead center.
Mm-hmm.
Not really on this.
No, this looks really nice.
This looks very, very nice. It's a 10.5-millimeter bezel on the top and the sides. It's 14-millimeter bezel on the bottom, so it's not quite bezel-less.
No,
but
it's thin.
It is super thin. It's chrome polished for the stand. It gives you that floating display look. And it's got a blue light filter that you can turn on at night.
Oh.
So that it doesn't, it doesn't mess up your sleep with them. Now, this is stupid. This is incredibly stupid. But I like it.
What?
I always put tape on my webcams.
Mm-hmm.
Webcam actually just retracts into the housing.
Aw, that's so cute.
So even if someone were to have access to your webcam, all they would see is the inside of the display.
Yeah, with nothing. The blackness. But you just press on it, it comes up. You can't,
You want a key that you can toggle?
I want a hotkey on my keyboard to make it come up. But that's fine.
That could be a KnowHow project. We could put an Arduino in there with a stepper.
Not worth it. No, it's nice.
Processor. Now, here's an interesting thing. I actually had a call with some of the HP people, and I was like, okay, well, here's something about a desktop versus, say, a notebook.
Mm-hmm.
Desktops hang around a lot longer than notebooks.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, notebooks you might replace. I mean, I replace them every 5 years, but other people replace every year or every 2 years.
Right.
A desktop, I've had the same desktop for 8 years.
Yeah.
I'm still using it.
And, you can swap out components, whether it's the hard drive, processor, GPU. Usually it's the GPU for me. After a couple of years, I'll switch that out. But also, my tendency not to kind of steer away from all-in-ones is that I would want to use this monitor, again later after the hardware has kind of worn out.
Oh, we're going to get to that, Brian.
Oh, are we?
We are going to get to that. Now, the other thing about this is, but going with that philosophy of them knowing that you're going to keep it for a while, they said, look, we get it. Gamers and the people who need high-performance desktops, they're going to build their own or they're going to choose high-performance configurations that they can, adjust. That's not what this is for.
No.
This is not a computer in their mind. This is an appliance. This is something that you're going to keep in a kitchen. This is something that you're going to keep in, a den. It's more of an entertainment machine than it is a computer, and that's how they've built it. So it's not super high-spec. This is an either Intel i5, the 7400T, or the i7-7700, neither of which are the top of their line. It's got a hybrid or dual storage. You've got a 256-gigabyte PCIe-connected NVMe SSD, as well as rotating storage. It's got up to 16 gigabytes of memory. You've got two SODIMs inside of you, so it is upgradable if you want to play with it.
So choose to take it apart.
Precisely. And the video card, well, it's not great. It's a... It's a integrated GTX 950M, so it's not even last generation. It's last generation.
Right, and I'm whenever I see the M on a GTX, I'm like, oh, okay, mobile.
Yeah. Right. But then again, this is not designed for gaming. This is for watching streaming media. It's got a Bang & Olufsen speaker bar, which is actually awesome. It's got this touch control.
Mm-hmm.
You can see I can increase and decrease.
That's cool.
It's the little touches. When I did the call and they were explaining all the things that this did, like, for example, there's a Qi charger here. So if you have a wireless phone, a wireless Qi charge phone, you just put it on here. And
that's usually where I set my phone when I sit down on my PC.
And you can get yourself some Qi charger. And also, the speaker on this is actually fantastic. The B&O actually is worth its money.
It sounds good.
Yeah, it really is. And then you've got a fantastic amount of ports. You've got USB 3. You've got USB-C with Thunderbolt. Mm-hmm. You have a media card reader on the side. We're going to do the full write-up when we do the actual review. But we wanted to give you a look at this because, you mentioned before the show if this was a competitor to, say, the Microsoft Surface.
Right.
Absolutely not. Totally different markets.
Okay.
Now, the Microsoft Surface is sort of, it's like a drafting type computer.
Right. Because this isn't touchscreen.
No, it's not touchscreen. This is really just for the people who want to have a really beautiful screen attached to a capable computer. You mentioned that if you're going to pay as much as you will for this, which I think this as priced out is about $1,600,
mm-hmm.
which is actually not that bad with a 34-inch monitor.
No.
This actually has HDMI in.
Okay, so you could have.
So this can just become a monitor.
That is cool. I like that.
And I've been waiting for that for a while because something like, say, the Surface, I would love to just have that monitor.
Right.
Well, I can with this. I just plug an HDMI in, and I can run my PlayStation or my Xbox over this beautiful monitor. Now, I'm still working on getting the aspect ratio sorted out because this is 21:9.
Yeah.
Doesn't look quite right on a standard device.
But does it just stretch it, or can you adjust it?
You can adjust. Yeah. But like, for example, if you hook a computer up to this, it will recognize the 3440,
whatever that resolution is.
3440 by 1440.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is an HP. This is their brand new all-in-one. We will be doing a full review of this, both on the new screensavers and in a future episode of Know How.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to show it to the audience just because, I mean, look at this thing, Brian. It's sexy.
It is pretty cool. I mean, I've always been skeptical of curved screens, but this one looks really nice, and yeah, the viewing angle is good on it. Now, you've got it plugged into Ethernet. Does it also have wireless?
It has Wi-Fi, but I mean, if I'm going to have a desktop, I am
not going to
plug it in via Wi-Fi. It's going to have a wired connection, otherwise I won't use it. Yeah. But they did enough right. I won't say it's the perfect computer because for me, the perfect computer would be high respect, especially since I'm going to be hanging on to it for so long.
Well, in my mind, there's no such thing as the perfect computer, but the right computer for you. Yeah.
But what they said this. They said, look, we could have put all of that in there, and then this thing would have been a $2,000, $2,500 computer.
Right.
Like, this is still affordable, and yet it feels like a premium product, and I kind of like that. I know it sounds like marketing, but this one, they actually did right.
Yeah, no, and I like the design has kind of grown on me. It makes me feel like it's out of an 80s movie executive computer or something like that. But I could totally see this being, almost like a family computer too, where you put this in the living room and you can watch stuff on it, but also like share it with people because it's got the nice speaker setup.
And it does have HDMI out, so you could take another one of these monitors because they do sell them separately and put it on. Here and have a 68-inch curved screen.
Because why not?
Because that's, I'm going
to
do that.
I'd like to do some photo editing on it and really put the monitor to the test.
I really did like that. I'm so happy with the Technicolor certification because what I would probably be using this for is for graphics work, which then kind of bums me out because it doesn't have a super powerful graphics card or super powerful CPU. Hmm. But it would still be enough to do, say, Photoshop. I probably wouldn't want to do video editing on this, but I could.
Yeah, I think for the price and the fact that you can actually use the monitor not just for this computer makes it more interesting than most all-in-ones because it's such a pain or such a sacrifice that you spend all this money on an all-in-one and then you can't use the monitor or like some of the other components for other things.
Right. Although you will get to that strange thing where like in 5 years you've still got a powerful computer but you're just using the monitor because you've got an even more powerful computer.
Right. Like a little box attachment.
And then the bass will just be looking at you like, but I'm powerful too.
Hey, the speaker's nice in it, so you got that.
Okay. We will be taking a closer look at this in the future, but next up, Brian, as you teased, I make mistakes.
That's right.
A lot of them.
Sometimes, well, yeah, but they're fun.
They're fun.
You learn from mistakes.
But we're going to help you learn from our mistakes because we've got a prototype of a future know-how project that we think you need to take a look at. But first, let's listen to these messages.
Previously on Twit.
Apparently, e-cigarette device batteries are also something that you need to keep an eye on, or they might light your pants on fire in your defendant's arson case. The jury can't believe a lawyer who's clearly a liar, right?
Triangulation.
We've got a great one today. Cyber Junkies here. Mark Rogers, principal security researcher at Cloudflare, he's head of security at DEF CON. That's got to be the toughest job in the world.
If you really want to change the world, you do it as a white hat. When you look at the complex problems that nation states face, the only person that's going to be able to dig them out is a hacker.
Tech News Today.
Everyone should have a dream. Justin Kobielka's dream was to create a snake with emoji on its scales. It's called the Emoji Ball Python. Kobielka created it through breeding because recessive mutation causes this pattern. So it has two smiley emoji on there and one alien emoji. Very exciting.
It's a Python story on a technology podcast that has nothing to do with Python.
It's true. Yes.
Twit, the happiest place on earth.
Okay, Brian, so as you did tease, we make mistakes. I make mistakes.
That's how we learn. That's why you're so knowledgeable.
That's not it, but yes, part of it. No, but you know, one of the things about making is that it's often inspired by real-world problems. We don't just make stuff to make things. It's normally we make stuff to fix something that we've seen in the real world.
I mean, sometimes we do, but usually there's a problem that we're trying to solve.
And this particular problem centered around, that's right, your abuse of plants.
That's my problem, is that I kill plants. Unintentionally.
You know, I remember when I was a kid, there was this thing called a chia pet, and it was almost impossible to kill. I mean, they used seeds that could grow under any condition. Right. All you had to do was water them once a week or so, and they'd be fine.
Somehow I have failed to do that.
You may have seen pictures on Brian's Twitter account. If you go to the side view here, this is what's left of his chia pet. Brian, why does it look like that?
He didn't always look like that. At one point, he did have chia seeds growing. They didn't get very far before then. I left for 2 days. It was 2 days, and it was bone dry, and they were dust, basically. So you offered to help me come up with some sort of irrigation system.
I did, and what I thought is, you know what? I bet we could reuse a previous project, because we did the aquavase not too long ago.
Yes.
We could adapt it to serve the purpose of Michelangelo or Donatello.
Or Donatello. Leonardo, whoever that might be. You know, I haven't identified which turtle he is yet.
Yeah. Oh, so I thought, okay, what we need is we need a way to keep this thing watered, keep it lit.
Keep it moist.
Keep it moist over a period of time of neglect. Like when you decide that you want to kill it. We want something.
We want
Arduino
something
controlled.
Foolproof. Because if it's not automated, it's going to die.
It's going to die. Yeah. And so I started designing something like this. This was actually the first version of it. Because remember, we're talking about prototypes. I thought, okay, I wanted something that was simple to make and something that could use readily found materials. So this is actually designed to fit onto a mason jar. Ball mason jars. And they come in all different sizes with the same mouth.
Right.
In fact, the ones that I use are 64 ounces. They're very, very large. And I thought, okay, that's a lot of water. That's a lot of nutrient solution.
Yeah.
So when I made this, if you can see, I have a couple of holes here. This was supposed to be the one that was going to run up the irrigation hose.
Okay.
And that irrigation hose was going to be connected to this, which was a small 12-volt pump. That 12-volt pump would take water from inside the reservoir. It would push it up. It would use some silicone tubing, which is right here, you know, surgical grade, so that I'm not leaching any chemicals into it. It would pump it up through the top, and then it would hit the tray. It would drain back down into the reservoir. So it would basically only take the water that the chia pet could actually use.
Yeah, because the chia pet, this, the design
it's
or this more material, it's porous. So it keeps the whole thing moist to feed the chia seeds, but also
it does drain out pretty quickly.
It leaks out of the bottom.
So what we wanted is we wanted a way to sort of recycle that.
Right.
When it leaks out of the bottom, we want to be able to feed it back up to the top. So I thought, okay, a gravity system is the easiest way to do this. It drains back down into the jar, And then I have a pump to pump the nutrient solution back up every once in a while
and
refill the chia pet.
Yeah.
Right? So, of course, this is all going to be Arduino controlled. And also, you'll notice that I put a second set of holes here. And that's so that I could run a bubbler so I could keep the air oxygenated.
Right, so the water doesn't get stagnant?
Correct, and that's what that's going to allow me to do. One problem. So when I made this original prototype, I didn't have your chia pet, so I just kind of guesstimated the dimensions.
Yeah.
And this kind of works. Oh. The problem is it kind of overhangs, and now I'm putting all the weight of this plus the chia pet on top of that ball jar.
Oh.
And I'm going to get leakage off the sides. And now my automated solution could end up being something that, like, floods your desk.
Yeah, and that's not going to be good.
So what I did was I went ahead and I supersized it. So we went from that to this. Of course, this
bigger
is much, much bigger. This is the exact same design. Same idea. So I've got these raised ridges so that even when the chia pet is in here, it won't completely block off the drain.
Ah, I see.
And it allows this to sit inside the middle of it.
Nice.
And it's now completely encapsulated. So
right.
No matter where the water drips, it's going to be fine. Now I do, however, I need a way to get the water into here.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I also need a way, as you notice, this has no mount. So what I did was I actually printed in two pieces. I have this is the cap for the ball jar, and this is I use that same silicone sealant that I used on the aqua vase to glue this to the bottom, and it makes a single unit.
Nice.
Yeah. You will also notice these little wings.
Yeah, that's to attach. That looks like for the attachment for the rest of the aqua vase project that you did.
Precisely, right. So I figured we already have the support for the aqua vase, so why not build that into this? Let's go ahead and bring out what the actual prototype looks like.
Voila.
You will remember this. So this is the aqua vase, but now it has a ball jar in there. It's a ball mason jar. Super simple. It uses those wings to connect this structure to this. So now I'm not putting all that weight and all that torque on the glass.
Right.
It's actually held up by the same structure that holds up my aqua vase.
Looks nice.
Okay, so if you could, you're the commander of the power, so you need to hook up.
Somewhere around here.
There you go.
Here it is.
Okay, well, you have to
do
take
I want
that
this
out.
One?
You have to take that whole thing out.
Oh, the whole
there
thing.
There you go.
Okay,
and you need the power for this because you've got the other adapter.
Right, so there's that one.
Okay.
And then here's the second power adapter.
We're going to clean all this up. So when I get to the finished project that we're actually going to show off on KnowHow, I'm going to redesign this base. So the Arduino is kept inside of here along with all the relays. And there'll be a little screen on the front that shows you the time and lets you set like when you want the watering to actually go off. Like
right,
30 seconds every hour.
If we left it on the whole time, it would just be overflowing.
It's a waste of power.
Yeah.
It's a complete waste of power. Okay, so let's see. Let's make sure good. My lights still work. So
yeah.
I can illuminate everything. Now, if you look here, I've got my silicone tubing, and up top is
spigot.
This is a little spigot. It's also 3D printed. I did this because I made a mistake.
What was that?
The pump I chose is 240 liters per hour.
That's probably a lot for the chia pet.
Way too much. It's 4 liters a minute. This is not a liter. So that's way too much. So this spigot actually acts like a regulator.
Okay.
In the future, I would probably choose a lower rated pump, but that's what I got.
Okay.
So this actually goes into the chia pet. Actually, could you re-aim that camera?
The side shot?
Yeah, the side shot so that they can actually see what's going on here.
Whoop.
And what this will allow me to do is it will allow me to feed the water directly into the watering hole of your Ninja Turtle. There you go.
I think he's going to be a Donatello.
He's going to be a Donatello.
He feels like a Donatello.
There we go. And so if you can go ahead and flip the power for the pump.
Power on.
There we go. And so this feeds myself. There you go. Super simple system. And what's going to happen is when this gets full, it's going to overflow, and then it's just going to drain back into the nutrient vase.
Okay.
So, yeah, this is a kind of gravity-fed hydroponic system that we're going to be building for GrowHow in the future. We're going to start it with something simple like a chia pet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the cool thing is we've already done a lot of the groundwork for this because if you remember from the Growduino project, we showed you how to trigger a relay with an Arduino. Well, if I can trigger a relay with an Arduino, I can trigger the power for this pump. We also showed you how to use an RTC, a real-time clock, on your Arduino, which means my Arduino knows the real-time at all times, even when it loses power. And I can set it so that, hey, you know what, turn on for 30 seconds every 2 hours. And that should be just enough time to fill the reservoir back up enough so that it doesn't die.
Yeah, well, I'm also thinking it might be a good idea to do like a built-in a little redundancy where there's a sensor that says if there's such an amount of water in the base right. here or something, don't trigger the filter because that means there's already too much water.
Right.
Now, we did mention that I make mistakes, and I have made a mistake on the prototype. If you'll notice, if you go to the side shot, this little riser right here,
yeah,
that's to keep the water, when it, if it does fill up this basin, it's to keep it from running out the outside of the base.
Yes.
Unfortunately, those risers are really weak, and what happens if you put a little pressure, they just snap off.
Oh, no.
So what I'm probably going to have to do is, on the next version of this, I'm going to have to increase the diameter of that wall to make sure that it doesn't just snap off.
Well, live and learn, especially with fast prototyping.
Yeah. But, I mean, I love the fact that I was able to just print this all up.
That's awesome.
And see how it works. Now, for those who aren't quite aware of exactly what I messed up, hold on, let me drain your Donatello. You said Donatello, right?
Yeah, he's a Donatello.
Okay, drain out Donatello here. Let me show you what the water flow actually looks like without the spigot. If I can get this off. There we go. Okay, Brian, if you could go ahead and turn on the pump.
Sure.
Okay, that's way too much water. This was actually designed to force water up 3 meters in a fountain, so...
So, is it easier to get a smaller pump then?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
Yeah, way easier to get a smaller. Actually, I just put a crimp in this thing. Okay. The other thing to realize about this is, I think in my final design, I might actually be able to bypass the bubbler, because the bubbler is just to oxygenate the water, right?
Right.
But what I can do is I can actually set up a bypass. If I still want to use this pump, I'll set up a bypass so most of the water actually just gets splashed around underneath.
And that's like a little bubbler in itself.
It's a bubbler.
And then the limited amount of water that you need for the chia pet goes up. Okay.
Precisely.
Yeah, I like that idea.
One thing I do have to design for, and you caught onto this, is like if this hose were to... Well, let me turn this off first. If this hose were to let go... And just do this.
Yeah.
And I'm gone, and it automates turning on the water. And now it's just drained a quart of water into your computer. That's probably not a good thing. Like right now, if it were to turn on,
that would destroy our laptops.
That would be bad. Let's just do that.
We'll just hang it in there, yeah.
Well, folks, this is coming up. If you want to play with this, this is actually going to be a lead-in to when we start doing deep water culture, DWC. Which is a really cool way of doing hydroponics. And we've already got the solution. We just have to scale it up and down depending
on
what we want to grow.
Water culture. Is that where like the plant is even more submerged or something?
Yeah, basically you just let the roots sit in the solution and every once in a while you pump the water around.
Oh, that's cool. So instead of just the roots, it's like... Like potatoes? Is that what you do? Or like something that grows in the earth? What? I'm just curious.
Think of it, no, like the air garden. It's exactly the same thing as the air garden, except instead of costing $300, it's going to cost us $20.
I see. And that's why you're trying to come up with the little screen and everything, too, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Folks, we know that this was a lot, from the questions to our little preview of the HP All-in-One to the things that I break. Now, if you want to find any of this stuff, you need to go to our show notes. Where did they find, Brian?
They find them at twit.tv/KH, where you can find handy links for downloading and subscribing, because this is going to be a multi-part episode, so don't miss one.
Indeed. Also, don't forget that you can find us on the socials. This thing just keeps getting in everyone's camera shot. You can find us on the socials. I'm going to be mostly in the G+ group. So you go to Google+, you look for know-how, a very short approval process to keep out all the spam accounts. But once you're in, you get access to almost 11,000 know-it-alls. The people who can give you ideas for projects, answer your questions, or maybe the people who you want to tutor up, to teach, so they can become the next generation of makers. Again, go to Google+ and look for know-how.
Yeah, so if we were to, say, have a project challenge for something like this, and you wanted to show off your different kind of chia pet, because I'm sure there's other... What other chia pet would you want? Like, I remember there's, like, the one where you can do the chia afro,
the chia sheep. Yeah, I'm down with that.
I mean, obviously, the chia ninja turtle is the best one, but I already got that one. But if you wanted to post it, G+ is perfect for that. Or if you want to take a picture of it and send it to us more directly, you can do that on Twitter. I am at @cranky_hippo.
And you can find me twitter.com/PadreSJ. And the third member of our crew, our director... Jimmy Joe. We call him Jimmy Joe.
There's his shot.
Term of endearment.
That's him right there.
This is Jimmy Joe. And you're going to find him at ANELF3. That's twitter.com/ANELF3.
Great guy.
Yeah. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
go save your chia pet, because you'll kill it otherwise. That's what happens.